First tonight, we bring in our Olympia correspondent, Austin Jenkins, to talk about the amount of money that's been spent to convince you to vote or not to vote for these measures. Austin, thanks for joining us tonight.
Good evening, Doug. Great to be here.
So you've done a report, or at least done some work, talking about how these initiatives are pretty expensive. Can we start to dig down a little bit on some of this?
Right. They're called citizen initiatives, but I often say that that's something of a misnomer, because the way you get on the ballot is by getting a lot of money behind the effort. And we're seeing that. Topping the list is the No on 1631 campaign. So this is the No campaign for the proposed carbon fee. $21 million raised so far by oil and gas companies, led by the Western States Petroleum Association. $13 million from the soda pop industry opposing Seattle-style taxes on sugary drinks. $10 million, nearly $11 million for the supporters of the carbon tax. So you're talking about tens of millions of dollars involved in these campaigns to get your votes, either for or against some of these higher profile campaign ballot measures.
And this doesn't even take into account the amount of money that it takes to get an initiative on the ballot in the first place.
Well, these numbers are total numbers that do take that into account. And you make a good point, which is that a lot of the heavy lift and a lot of the spending is to get on the ballot. And in some cases, these initiative campaigns are paying $2, $3, $4, even $5 to $7 per signature. So it's a professional corps that's out there gathering these signatures. They're pros at doing it. They're getting paid by the signature. And when there's money to be spent and time is short, each voter signature can fetch quite a top dollar.
Is there any historical way that we can measure how this compares to past elections?
Certainly some of the spending this year that we're seeing is comparable, if not greater than what we've seen in the past. Typically, the highest spending initiatives, whether that's the for side or the against side, are when an issue galvanizes either the business community or the labor community, both of which tend to have deeper pockets. In this case, with the carbon fee proposal, the for campaign is getting a lot of money from environmental groups, not surprisingly. But yeah, these numbers are certainly staggering, perhaps not unprecedented. But what I often also say is that we tend to see, when it comes to campaign finance, the numbers get bigger over the years. They rarely get smaller over the years. There's more money going into politics.
And so do the people who spend all that much money. They expect some sort of results. But has there historically been a correlation between the folks who spend a lot of money and whether their measures pass or fail?
Absolutely. Spending does matter a lot. I will say that the most sophisticated ballot measure sponsors very carefully poll test their ideas and their concepts, because they go in knowing that when they put this in front of voters on day one to start getting signatures, they need to have about 60% support for the idea, because they're only going to lose ground going forward as the No campaign, for whatever the issue is, starts firing up. So in many respects, the sophistication behind, again, these quote-unquote citizen initiatives is quite remarkable. A good example of that is the gun-related initiative on the ballot this year, 1639. This is the third time since 2014 that we will see a gun control measure on the ballot. The last two have passed. And what I think is very interesting in this year about 1639 is what it doesn't do. It's not banning so-called assault weapons. It is not limiting magazine capacity. It is doing things that the sponsors believe can pass muster with a majority of Washington voters, and that was very carefully crafted.
So as we look at the four initiatives, are there significant differences in terms of spending? For example, are there some that are, you know, fairly close that you could say, maybe it's a toss-up sort of thing if you just throw in the money, versus some where one side throws in a significant amount of money and the second side is much less in terms of fundraising?
There are certainly some discrepancies. I mean, just eyeballing this in terms of the carbon fee initiative, the No's are out raising the yeses on a basically a 2-to-1 margin. When it comes to the proposed, the ban on taxes on grocery items, soda pop, that campaign is blowing the competition out of the water here with $13 million raised. One of the biggest discrepancies is that the gun control measure has raised about $4.5 million. Clearly, the National Rifle Association has deep pockets and could be funding a no campaign. And it has created a political action committee, but just a couple of $100,000 have gone into that. And I'm not sure if that's an indication at this point that they don't think they can defeat this, or if they feel like it's just smarter to activate their members to vote no rather than to spend money trying to get voters generally to vote no. So the National Rifle Association has such a robust membership and the ability to really galvanize its base just by communicating with them that in many cases they don't need to spend raw dollars to try to persuade voters more globally. So there are, but that's a noteworthy imbalance, Doug.
So in our last minute, let's make the transition then to talk about Initiative 940, which we'll move on to after we talk with you. Tell us the story about how 940 as an initiative came about and the changes that were made and why there's kind of a yes and no on that.
Yeah, it's a complicated story, but very briefly, I-940 was qualified for the ballot. It creates a 2-part good faith test that police groups really strongly oppose for lawful use of deadly force, keeping in mind that Washington State has one of the highest bars in the country right now, highest tests, if you will, for criminally charging a police officer who uses deadly force. You have to show that they acted with malice and in bad faith. There was a compromise deal that emerged at the very end of the legislative session this year, and there was an effort to try to avoid 940 going to the ballot. This was a compromise between sponsors of the initiative and law enforcement groups. The Supreme Court ruled that that compromise cannot appear, was not constitutional, does not replace 940. 940 will be on the ballot and not the compromise language. And so now that's where voters are having to decide. Do they support this? We don't know if the compromise could still live to see another day once the legislature comes back into session, but that's certainly, I think, the intent of those on both sides who crafted that that language.
Austin Jenkins is the Olympia correspondent for the Northwest News Network. Thank you for your good words, as always.
You're very welcome, Doug. Thanks for having me on.